Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Well, it looks like maybe it has begun happening. Our most dreaded fears. Right-wingers with guns coming after people because they are liberal. Welcome, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Knoxville, Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee. The police say that a man accused of a shooting... This is Duncan Mansfield writing for the Associated Press that a man accused of a shooting that killed two people at a Tennessee church targeted the congregation because of its liberal social stance. The Knoxville News takes it even farther. He wrote a four-page letter, which he left in his car. Apparently, he thought this was going to be death by cop. He went in and killed at least one man and was attempting to kill others. And left behind what apparently would have been a suicide letter. And he wrote of his hatred of, quote, liberals in general as well as gays. Now, this is a Unitarian church that had just put out a sign saying that they were welcoming their gay brothers and sisters to the church. And when you look at the kind of, and when you listen to the kind of rhetoric that has been going on year after year, day after day, year after year, for nearly two decades now, vilifying liberals. This is a guy who was out of work. He's 58 years old. He was blaming liberals for his terrible situation in life. And he's got people like, well, here's Michael Savage.
You know. Liberalism is, in essence, the HIV virus.
Liberalism is, in essence, the HIV virus. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got Falwell and Robertson saying, you know, well, because of liberal behaviors, 9/11, was predictable. In fact, we deserved it, you know. We're to blame. The liberals are to blame for 9/11.
That I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
And Pat Robertson.
Well, I totally concur. And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government, and so we're responsible as a free society for what the top people do, and the top people, of course, the court system.
Yeah, and then Pat Robertson tried to take it on and say, and it's not just the liberals, it's the Supreme Court. And since then, they've added Mr. Roberts and Mr. Alito, of course, and all kinds of marvelous things have gone on. So this shooting, I mean, are we seeing the 1960s repeated? This is just absolutely bizarre. And it's like people don't understand or remember even, you know, what being a liberal means, you know, what this is all about. I mean, you know, what do these words even mean? This, where does it go? I mean, John Kennedy talked about this when he was running for president in 1960.
What do our opponents mean when they apply to us the label liberal? If by liberal they mean, as they want people to believe, someone who is soft in his policies abroad, who is against local government, and who is unconcerned with the taxpayer's dollar, then the record of this party and its members demonstrate that we are not that kind of liberal. But if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights and their civil liberties, someone who believes that we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
John Kennedy, in the fall of 1960, speaking before the Liberal Party, actually, in New York City. We really need to reclaim this word. I'm telling you, it's and re-educate people about what it means. You know, what does the word liberal mean? How do we define this? For example, a couple of news stories here today. Just to provide hooks for this whole thing. The first from the Financial Times. Today's Financial Times. The headline, New Asia Antitrust Laws Pose a Threat to M&A. Capital M, ampersand, capital A. Now, you'll recall, before 1980, we had a lot of medium-sized companies in the United States. We didn't have any, or very many, huge industrial behemoths that absolutely dominated entire industries right across the board. You know, there was no Microsoft that basically owned the software business. There wasn't a small handful of banks that owned the banking business. By the way, let me just toss in, I think that a good chunk of this savings and loans, we already went through that, the S&L crisis. A good chunk of this mortgage crisis and a good chunk of this banking crisis is going to be viewed, is being used by these industries for consolidation. I shared with you last week a story from the Financial Times which said this is a great opportunity for consolidation. In other words, mergers and acquisitions, M&A, mergers and acquisitions, making the big fish bigger and destroying the middle-sized fish and the little fish. Well, China and India are having nothing to do with it. In today's Financial Times, tough antitrust laws that take effect in China this week and India later this year could delay or thwart high-profile cross-border mergers and acquisitions. Lawyers and business executives have warned. Oh, they're very worried about this. Keep in mind, Microsoft was punished in the European Union for antitrust violations, for being a monopoly. They were charged with that. They fought it for years and years. They ended up paying some fines, as I recall. I don't recall how it was all resolved, or even if it has been resolved, frankly. But they were charged with this. And what this article says is that China and India are implementing regimes based on the European Union model, covering anti-competitive agreements, abuses of dominance, and merger control. Lawyers and executives believe China and India's thresholds for merger filings are too low. Of course, America, you know, and likely to ensnare global deals that would have little effect on competition. They fear enforcement agencies in every country will lack the resources and expertise to quickly deal with complex merger issues. Well, maybe these countries are just protecting themselves. Maybe that's what countries should be doing. The fact that the United States, ever since Reagan came into office for the last 30 years, has not been protecting ourselves from large predatory corporations, but instead has thrown the door open. I mean, keep in mind, when Reagan came into office, there were fewer than 300 lobbyists in Washington, D.C. Today, there are over 30,000. I mean, this is an absolute sea change. Here's the other story that I think ties all this stuff together. This is from the Oregonian. It was an AP story. Larry Margasek wrote it. The headline, Food Industry Bit by Lobbying Win. And it's about this incredible irony that the food industry, well, here, quoting from the story, the food industry pressured the Bush administration years ago to limit the paperwork companies would have to keep to help U.S. health investigators quickly trace produce that sickens consumers. Excuse me, consumers. In other words, the FDA was saying that there should be an electronic identifying tag put on every case or every pallet of food product at its point of origin, and as it's shipped, that RFID chip, basically, like we have on, like they have on clothing, basically. This is standard operating principles in every other part of the retail sector. Clothing, computers, electronics, books, they've all got these little tags on them, and particularly at the pallet level. And every time it gets broken down, put into another package, that package has to have that number on it. So if you got a bad jalapeno, you could know within 5 minutes. You call the store and say, what's the RFID number on that package? And boom, you know where that came from. It's increasingly looking like it all came from Mexico. But it's taken 1,300 sick people in 43 states to figure that out. Why? Because the food industry lobbied Washington, D.C. And, as the AP story says, the Bush administration also killed a plan to require the industry to maintain electronic tracking records. Republicans and companies said, these are too burdensome. Yeah.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The real source of this? What's at the bottom of why things are so bad? And here's this guy goes into this church, and you know, because he's going to shoot some liberals, and he kills a guy, and he shoots a bunch of people with shotgun pellets, and you know they've arrested him now, but he's out to kill some liberals because he believes that liberals are responsible for his not having a job and for the world, you know, not going the way he wants it to go. He feels like a victim. When you look at the history of how countries become prosperous and how they maintain that prosperity, there is something that absolutely jumps out at you. And it is that there's this very, very simple history. I'm going to condense 400 years of economic history into about a paragraph here. Countries start out agricultural in, you know, using modern society metaphors. They start out growing things. England in the 1500s had nothing but sheep. Their only industry was wool. That was it. Countries start out agricultural. They then build infrastructure. This started, Henry VII actually began this. He erected tariffs and began building industry in the United Kingdom. He built roads, he built bridges, he was transporting power to the extent that they had power, it was principally coal, and he was investing in human infrastructure and schools and hospitals and housing, and this is all the infrastructure that's necessary for business. And then you've got the economic infrastructure, you've got basically saying building around the country, putting a barrier around the country called tariffs, saying we will, if manufactured goods from another country are coming into our country, we're going to charge a tax on them. Why? So that if they're made domestically, they'll be cheaper. Why? To encourage people to make them domestically so that we will end up with industry within our own country. The British did this in the 17th century, in the 16th and 17th century, and they did it so effectively that they became a major industrial power. The United States did this in the 18th century, in the 1700s. In the very late 1700s, in fact, it was Alexander Hamilton who laid out the idea for it in an address to Congress in 1791. And these policies were put into place in the late 1790s during the Adams administration. And then also during the Jefferson administration. And we had tariffs that averaged from 20% to 50% in the United States steadily from the founding of this country right up until the 1980s. This is Friedrich List, the German philosopher, the German economist, in 1844 wrote a book about this in which he attacked the idea of free trade. That was the word he used. He said the people who were supporting free trade were trying to kick the ladder out from underneath developing countries. What his point was is that when a country reaches the point where they're making everything, see, they go from being a country that's basically growing stuff or shipping minerals out, the third world country status, you know, like England making having nothing but wool in the 1500s, or Saudi Arabia today just exporting oil. They're basically, you know, they're just, that's it. And then they start, then they go to the point where they're actually manufacturing things, and then they need to import raw materials, and they need to export the finished goods. They need people to give them their stuff, their raw materials, their iron ore, their oil, their coal, their whatever, and they need people to buy their finished goods. And so they have a vested interest in keeping a large part of the world in third world status. This is how countries have historically done this. We're talking about economic empire here. And the way that they and the way that developed countries keep undeveloped countries in third world status is with so-called free trade. Frederick List called it kicking out the ladder, kicking away the ladder. Is basically saying you cannot, if you're going to take a loan from the World Bank, if you're going to get money from the International Monetary Fund, if you're going to take money from the United States, you cannot, Chile, you cannot have social security for your people. You can't have social infrastructure. You can't have public education, free public education. You can't have to create the intellectual infrastructure. Here in Oregon, oddly enough, one of our very conservative columnists writing a piece in the Sunday paper, David Saracen, about how 2 years free tuition at any Oregon public university, the state would issue bonds to cover the cost and get its money back when income tax revenues rise because of better educated Oregonians. Well, David's absolutely right, but that's the liberal position. So anyhow, what countries do is they say to developing countries, you have to embrace free trade so that our fully developed large manufacturing companies can eat your lunch, basically. The problem is that in the United States, when we embraced this theology in the 1980s with Reaganism and Thatcherism, it's called neoliberalism, and we dropped our barriers, we weren't so developed that we could effectively compete against all these people because China was coming up the road. And they were doing exactly what England did and exactly what we did, what List talked about in 1844. They've got, you know, the average import tariff into China right now is in the neighborhood of 30%. The average import tariff into the United States right now is around 2%. So China's protecting their industries while they're eating everybody else's lunch. And we're the victims of this right-wing theology.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Right-wing hate radio encouraging murder? Need we be concerned? Rush Limbaugh talking about how Obama is experiencing self-loathing. He says because he was indoctrinated at his schools. And then he says it's self-loathing. Not of himself, of course, because he's the Messiah. Well, here it is.
Not of himself, of course, because he's the Messiah. But in the aggregate, self-loathing of nation. The kind of self-loathing of America that the left here and in Europe embraces. And that's why they love Obama, because he loathes America.
Oh, he hates the country, yes.
He blames America. America's responsible for all that's wrong in the world.
Right.
Just need somebody in touch who has compassion and sensitivity. The rest of the world will miraculously love us. There will be no more evil.
Yeah. Well, actually, it seems like that might be the case. If we just could get somebody who is in touch. Oh, man. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. By the way, if you've been trying to get into our website or into our chat room earlier or into our website, it's up now, and tomhartman.com, and the chat room is available and open. Mike in New Hampshire. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Mike? How's it going, Tom? How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. You're on the air. What's up?
Not too much. Listen, I heard what you were saying. Usually I'm listening to Davey Hines on the podcast, but I basically wanted to call you for some advice. I have a lot of ideas. As far as doing what you were talking about in the last segment when you were saying how we need to define the term, redefine the term liberal.
Yeah.
I think what the problem is that as liberals and people on the left, we're constantly going at these individual issues on right-wing conservative Republican terms. And I think what the strategy needs to be is to use the term that you used last segment, is to kick the ladder out from their entire ideology. I think we should have targeted ads all across the country attacking Reaganomics. I think we should be attacking right-wing media, right-wing think tanks. I think anytime anybody mentions the name George Soros, then automatically names like Richard Mellon Scaife, Joseph Kors.
Yeah, this is what the right has been doing for 30 years, and they've been doing it very effectively, and they've been doing it very successfully. And you've got now some organizations on the left that are talking back. Media Matters, David Brock's organization, MediaMatters.org, doing an excellent. In fact, that's where I got the clip of Limbaugh that I just played for you a moment ago. And Think Progress, the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, ThinkProgress.org. There's a bunch of them. Mike, spot on. Absolutely, very, very well said. We do need to take back the word, and we do need to have a more organized and aggressive approach to this. And there are, you know, there's a lot of great websites now on the left that are forming, you know, from Huffington Post to Common Dreams to Buzzsplash to Op-Ed News. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of them. Truth Out, Crooks and Liars, Fire Dog Lake, that are doing a great job. And very little of it is filtering up to the national media. In fact, if you, Glenn Greenwald, I believe it was, wrote a great piece, as I recall it was for Salon, about how Politico.com has become a right-wing cesspool, and his phrase. And in fact, it was designed as such. It was designed as a place for right-wing pundits to be fed to the mainstream, to the corporate media, and that's what's happening. Christian in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Christian.
Yes, hello. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hey, it's time for Obama to stop trying to be John McCain. It's time to stop beating up this demented old man who says anything that comes to his mind. It's time for the Democrat to start taking it to this old man, taking him out to the woodshed, and teach him a lesson. That you don't say anything and then expect for nobody to point out that you're an idiot.
Yeah, well, broadly speaking, I don't disagree, Christian. I would say that it's not Obama who should be doing that, though. Traditionally, that is the role of the vice presidential candidate to be the, you know, so you have a good cop, bad cop routine, and the vice presidential candidate is the bad cop. And in that regard, Cheney did a brilliant job. And so right now, Obama has to have his surrogates do it. But for example, there's this new McCain ad. Thank you very much for the call. There's this new McCain ad out right now that is saying that the reason this ad is explicitly saying that the reason Barack Obama did not go visit wounded troops when he was in Germany was because he couldn't bring cameras in with him. Now, that is, it's a lie. It's just a flat out lie. And the Obama camp has surrogates out there saying, you know, contacting the media, saying, if you'll put us on, we'll talk about how this is a lie. But it's the fact that it's a lie is not making, and this is not a 503 or whatever. This is not one of these, you know, Swift Boat groups. This is the official McCain campaign promulgating a lie about Barack Obama in an attack ad. It's getting ugly. And here we are 100 days out from the election on this day. Lee in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Tom, first time caller.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah. I know that liberals out there, and I'm a liberal. In South Carolina, we call ourselves Yellow Dog Democrats. Mm. And I'm just as far to the left as you can get. But, you know, I got so ashamed of being called a liberal and dirty old liberal and, you know, all that sort of thing. So I realized that it was the far-right conservatives that was doing this. So they claim to have some kind of connection to God and his Bible and so forth. So I looked in their Bible, and I found that the word liberal appear 6 times. And every time it appears, it is in a good light and shows that God did a liberal thing or something good for the cause of humanity. So I wrote a little booklet on it, and I just wanted these right-wing conservatives to know that actually their Bible tells them that their God is a liberal.
Yeah. Well, Jesus, and, in fact, there's a great, well said, Lee, there's a great bumper sticker out there called Jesus was a liberal, and it's true. Jesus was not necessarily the first liberal, but one of the more articulate ones. And I mean, simply read, you know, Matthew 5, 6, 7, 8, the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 25, his talk about the sheep and the goats, the metaphor, the parable of the sheep and the goats, and you get it. Jesus, you know, yeah, Christianity, and not just Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam. I mean, all of these religions have at their core the liberal concepts of it's a we society, we're all in this together, I am my brother's keeper. Lee in Houston, Texas. Hey, Lee. Lee, you're on the air.
Hello? Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air, Lee.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, three things. Economics, guns, and a question for you. On the economics, you'd be surprised how many conservatives have converted away from the free market thinking using your football analogy from what would Jefferson do. And,
oh, great.
Yeah. Second of all, with that, you know, I meet a lot of, I'm a truck driver, and I meet a lot of guys out here and tell them that I'm a liberal, and they look just horrified, and then they're shocked to learn that I'm not an open borders advocate and that I do support the Second Amendment very strongly. And I tell them that, you know, it's because, you know, you let the right-wing media make liberal a dirty word, and it's simply not the truth. They've stolen that word and made it mean something that it's not. If people hear, well, he's not an open borders advocate, you support the Second Amendment, how can you possibly be a liberal? Yeah. And I don't understand.
Those are frankly fringe issues, although actually the open borders, liberals historically, you go back to the union movement of the 1880s, I mean, they're very much about having closed borders and both in terms of trade and in terms of immigration. I mean, that, you know, but that's a whole other thing. Anyhow, your point is well made, Lee, and I good on you for being out there and representing all of us well. Thank you. Gary in Fort Lauderdale listening on Wins. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I don't want to appear to be a crazy person, but I can somewhat see why this man in Tennessee may have committed this crime. You know, he may have been intoxicated with the hate talk of Rush Limbaugh. In that part of the country, that's all he gets to listen to.
That's right.
And, you know, down here we had 2 cases of murder. One was a boy and one was a girl, where they both responded to television violence and killed their playmates. Actually, one killed an old lady and one killed the playmate. And it was because what they'd seen on television, that was their defense. And I can honestly see the effect of that hate monger on a person that would drive them to that.
You know what drove the Rwandan genocide?
Tell me.
Where 800,000 people were murdered, mostly with machetes, talk show hosts.
I believe it.
No, I'm dead serious. There was a group of, let's see, it was the Hutus killing the Tutsis, as I recall. There was a group of, in any case, whichever one it was, whichever was the aggressor group, there was a group of, they controlled most of the radio talk shows, and there was a group of talk show hosts who were telling people to get out there and kill other people. And that's what drove the genocide in Rwanda. I mean, go back, it's in the newspaper articles. I mean, it's not a secret. So you're absolutely right, Gary. At some point here, have we gotten to the point where right-wing hate radio is yelling fire in a crowded theater? Have we gotten there? Andreas in Queens, New York. We just have a half a minute here before this break, Andreas.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't control the clock. It's a hard clock.
I know. You want to put me on after the break?
What's your point, Andreas? I'm sorry.
We're talking about the root causes of homophobia. I can't do it in 30 seconds. So
okay, all righty. Thanks a lot. Yeah, what can I say? We've got this clock, and the music starts at 45 minutes past the hour, and off it goes. I probably should have given you a minute or more. Anyway, 45 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman program. Our program, by the way, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. You can find out more about that at teamster.org. Check it out. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
Out tonight in the mystic garden, the wounded flowers were dangling from the vine. I was passing by a young cool crystal fountain. Someone hit me from behind. Ain't talking, just walking through this weary world of hot burning, still yearning. No one on earth would ever know.
Have you gotten those emails that say, oh yeah, Barack Obama, he was educated in a madrasa? Well, it's not true, by the way. And no, he wasn't a Muslim. But that's what the email says. And then you get right-wing talk show hosts like Limbaugh coming along.
He has been indoctrinated at his schools, and he has believed what he has been told there. And among those beliefs is that the United States is fundamentally a force for provocation in the world, and that the United States is at root responsible for the way we are treated and seen by those who hate us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's been educated in his schools. David in Los Angeles. Hey, David.
Tom, I'm a big fan, man, and I have been since you did all the research on the Kennedy assassination. I want to thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I mean, that to me is the turning point of America. Imagine what we would have been like had those Kennedys not been killed.
Yep, I agree.
I want to respond to this Limbaugh thing. I'm so angry about all of this stuff that here is a guy who's spent his entire life devoting himself to public service, had options when he got out of school, tops in his class.
This guy being
Harvard.
Barack Obama.
Yes, Obama could have done anything with his life, dedicates himself to public service, and then in thanks for it, instead of talking about issues, they're saying he loathes America. I just think it's time. I love that bit that you played from Jack Kennedy. It's time to stand up, for the liberals to stand up and say, look, every other time that there has been some sort of a biblical agenda in this country, unless I'm wrong, you may know more about this than I do, it has been fueled by liberal sensibilities.
Right. The abolition movement, every progressive movement, from including, by the way, the creation of the United States of America was done by liberals.
Absolutely right. Absolutely.
It was
right.
The conservatives who didn't want there to be a revolution.
I just can't believe that we've descended to a place where sloganeering can besmirch somebody so badly in the eyes of people. But I do want to say one thing to everybody listening out there. I just worked down in San Diego for a few days, and I was in the midst of Oceanside area, and there's a lot of military families down here. And I have a bumper sticker on the back of my car that says, I support our troops, that's why I question our leaders. And I had more wives and parents come up to me in parking lots of stores and say, that's a great bumper sticker. My son's his fourth time over there. My husband is his third time over there.
Right.
I really hope Obama wins and puts an end to this. So military families are out there, and instead of, you know, fearful that I was going to get my ass kicked, for lack of a better word, for having it on there. I had a lot of people come up and say, you know, thank you for wearing that. Now, let me just, I have one more thing. I know that you have a short period of time. Can you just give me what, and I don't want you to endorse anything, I just want your opinion, what's the best book on the Kennedy assassination?
Well, I think it's ours, Ultimate Sacrifice, the one that Lamar and I wrote.
Well, it's a great book.
Yeah, thank you, David. I gotta move along here, but Mafia Kingfish by Davis it was also. I mean, there's a bunch of them, but I ours is one of the most recent. Also, I think that's another reason why it's a good one. Let's see here, Arnold in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Arnold, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing, man?
Just
good
fine.
Talk to you again. Listen, I'm gonna give you an unsophisticated poll. As a truck driver who I just left Richmond, Virginia, to come all the way over to Nevada and make a delivery, you would not believe the amount of bumper stickers I've seen, Obama bumper stickers. I'm telling you, man, it was a time I was so guitarred, I used to see that George W. Bush bumper sticker, Bush Cheney bumper sticker. I mean, I've seen people with, I would not believe they would have an Obama bumper sticker on their car, man. It's an unsophisticated poll, but I'm telling you.
Hopefully, Arnold, you're a prophet. You know, you're seeing the future. I sure hope so. And thank you very much for the call and for letting us know. I mean, we've got to take this country back. William in Los Angeles. Hey, William.
Hi. It's first time for my calling, although I've been listening to you ever since they got the K-Talk going.
Great.
I really appreciate what you have to say. You introduce a lot of rationality into discussion here. That's important.
Thank you.
I am really upset about what you were talking about earlier, what happened. Was it yesterday?
No, it might have been. It was either yesterday or this morning. This guy goes into this church and starts killing people.
Yeah.
Killed one guy, starts shooting people because they are liberals and because the church are apparently, because the church had a sign out in front saying, had just put up a sign saying that they welcomed their gay brothers and sisters.
Well, I've got a few comments which may seem a little banal, but nevertheless, we've got a religious conflict in this country, I do believe, or at least there's a religious divide in this country.
Yeah, this was a Unitarian Universalist church.
Of course.
It's not even, I don't want to say it's not even a religion because, you know, they don't have all that status, but you know, it's a religion that doesn't acknowledge the existence of God. This is not a, I don't think that this was a debate about religion. This guy was going after liberals.
This was
a political statement.
And
the Unitarian Universalists have been at the forefront of a lot of really good and progressive political activity.
And very pacifistic, too, in regard to that, I do believe.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think, and I'm afraid, the differences that are getting to be so great that both sides, especially the right, we're not even talking the same language.
And this is the problem, is that the right is using the language of demagoguery and demonization.
Yeah.
And to characterize people who reflect the actual values, the actual historic values of this country, as being traitors, or as we just heard from Limbaugh, as loathing America. Limbaugh saying, yeah, Barack Obama, he loathes America, as in hates. I mean, this is bizarre beyond comprehension. And this guy goes off and shoots people.
This is Tom Hartman. You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Well, we've been talking about the blame game here. In fact, I mentioned the Hutus and the Tutsis. It's amazing. I just looked at the trial of the Hutus, and there was actually three journalists who were prosecuted for genocide in Rwanda because they ran a radio station. And, well, here, this is from a story in Editor and Publisher. The radio station, nicknamed Radio Hate, was actually called Radio Mili Collines, was the mouthpiece of the extremist Hutu power movement. At first, it addressed its Tutsi opponents with warnings like, "You cockroaches must know you are made of flesh. We won't let you kill. We will kill you first." But once the massacres had begun, the prosecution said the broadcast goaded Hutu militia groups to go to work and kept inciting people with messages like, "The graves are not yet full." So it's all about the blame game. And now the blame game comes to energy. Carrie Lucas is with us, the Vice President of Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. And Carrie, I don't mean to imply that you are supporting murder. I really don't.
Kind of a harsh lead in there, Tom.
Well, it's a segue off the last hour. We've been talking about this guy in Tennessee who walked into this Unitarian Universalist church and just killed two people and left behind a letter. He thought he would be killed in the process, left behind a letter in his car saying he was doing it because he hated liberals. And there's you know, all this, frankly, right-wing hate talk out there. And there's in East Tennessee, there are no liberal voices at all on the radio. And I see a connection, frankly. So anyhow, I wanted to close that up and let's move the conversation forward to talk about the energy crisis. The notes that I have here is who is at fault, Democrats or Republicans, and I'm almost afraid to put it in that frame. Al Gore has offered a 10-year solution. Let's get us off this stuff. T. Boone Pickens, who's going to be on this show in the next hour, has a solution. He says we can't drill our way out of this problem. Republicans have blocked and are continuing. There's an active filibuster ongoing in the Senate, blocking legislation that would give tax incentives or tax breaks to companies or individuals who want to use non-carbon based forms of energy. And there's wind, solar, water, geothermal, tidal. Things like that. What's wrong with that? Why go off and say, you know, the problem, you know, you're being hurt at the gas pump because the liberals won't let us drill?
Well, you know, I think that, first of all, there's lots of blame to go around because Republicans were in power for many years and didn't do anything to increase the supply of energy. And now the Democrats are sitting there and are Nancy Pelosi sitting on her hands, too. So I don't think that anybody gets off scot-free here. There's lots of blame to go around. And, you know, I know that everybody out there, myself included, hopes that there's going to be more alternative energy in the future and that that's going to be able to be a bigger part of our energy mix. But we need to be realistic about the role that oil continues to play in our energy infrastructure today, and recognize that we need oil, and we need it now, and we're going to need it in 10 years. And right now, we're really handicapping the United States by not allowing drilling in so many of the places where we know that there are vast reserves of oil and natural gas, and that we need to get serious about this. And you know, we've had the president has had to go out there and try to, you know, beg foreign countries to give us more oil. This is something that if Barack Obama is going to be president, I can't imagine that he is going to want to depend entirely on the Middle East or Venezuela and be as needy as we are today in relying on other countries for our oil reserves. And we can do this in environmentally friendly ways. I just think that we need to move beyond this idea that all drilling is awful.
Fine. But the fact of the matter is that, number one, we had Hurricanes Katrina and Rita that unleashed an oil spill that was much, much larger than the Exxon Valdez. There were over 144 different oil spills that came out as a result of those two hurricanes hitting. Massive amounts of oil. It's still washing up on the shores. It still smells like petroleum down there. And contrary to the lies, frankly, that have been put out by people on Fox News and whatnot, I mean, all you have to do is go back and read the reports. And the oil industry would be the first to tell you that there was, you know, massive oil spills. There were 144 spills that were over 100,000 gallons each, and, you know, which is millions of gallons of oil. And two, that even if we said today, okay, fine, drill off all the coasts, let's put up oil rigs everywhere, it's going to be 10, 15 years before that oil starts coming into the United States. Whereas right now, T. Boone Pickens is saying, you know, in 2 years, he can be generating, you know, enough power to feed a city of 500,000 people with a couple hundred acres in Texas.
Well, if that's true, then he should have investment just coming at him from all sorts of private sources, and he is going to be a multi-billionaire.
Well, he already is, and he does.
Well, then that's fine. Then he should go ahead and do it. He's not going to need government tax breaks. He doesn't need taxpayer money then to do it. If this is really the solution,
but actually he does.
The industry should be coming in to
actually he does, Carrie, because he can't get his power from where it's generated to where it's used without the government coming in and building transmission lines.
Why not? I mean, why can't, if this is really the solution, if this is going to be such free energy and is so obviously going to be a moneymaker.
Well, it's not free. It's just cheaper than oil, or it's the same cost as oil, but it gets us off the oil bandwagon. I mean, this is just a 30-second clip of Jimmy Carter in 1979, July 15, 1979. Just listen to this.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And he actually passed that legislation. He continues.
Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
And Ronald Reagan came into office a year later and shut that stuff down, just totally shut it down. And Republicans have, at the behest of the big oil industry, have been blocking any meaningful attempts to revive any of those industries ever since.
Well, I think that again, if you're making it sound as though they've outlawed, or Republicans have somehow outlawed solar energy or outlawed wind energy, I am all for.
No, what they have been doing is they've been giving tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars since Jimmy Carter was president in subsidies and tax breaks to oil companies.
Well, you know, I'm against. I think that we should stop subsidizing ethanol. We should stop subsidizing oil. We need to have a level playing field. The taxpayers are.
Why have a level playing field? Why not subsidize those things that are good for us and stop subsidizing those things that are bad for us?
Well, you know, I think that we need to be really careful about saying what's good and bad. You think about something like ethanol production, and that's one of the things that politicians on both sides of the aisle have really pushed this idea that we need to move towards.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of ethanol either, Carrie, but what's bad about solar power?
Nothing bad about solar power. If it can compete and if it really is going to be efficient, then that's great. It should be. If that's something we should absolutely.
Then why don't we as a society say that we're going to provide to average homeowners, I mean, $10, $20 billion in tax breaks like the oil industry has right now, and the nuclear industry, that's a lot of money. I mean, that's thousands of dollars per household in the United States. And let's give those tax breaks to people like Jimmy Carter did in 78 and 79. And there was this explosion of solar construction across the United States, because every family qualified for, you know, $2,000 in tax credits, which would be like $8,000 or $8,000, maybe $5,000 or $6,000 in today's money. I mean, why not do that?
This is something that it's absolutely, there are lots of bills out there and lots of things that are giving a leg up to alternative energy proposals. And I know right now the Republicans have been pushing something called an all of the above energy policy plan, where they're trying to get subsidies for alternative energies to spur them along. But we have to be realistic and recognize that solar power, wind power, these are not going to replace oil. We can't, Americans right now have to be sitting.
They can replace oil for generating electricity.
Well, they're not going to. Yeah, but what about the problems at the gas pump? I mean, why is it that environmentalists have continued to say that we can't do things like drill in ANWR, something that is completely sensible, can be done in an environmentally friendly way, and will really make it
because it makes us vulnerable to, you know, one terrorist with one 50 caliber bullet can take out our oil supply if we're bringing it down a pipe from ANWR.
Well, you know, I think that's an exaggeration. And, of course, there are going to be precautions. There's millions of regulations out there to protect us from environmental damage. We need to get serious, though, about allowing sensible drilling.
Okay. 16 minutes past the hour. Carrie Lucas, Vice President, Policy and Economics of the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. Thanks, Carrie, for the conversation.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
It's always good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. 866-303-2270. What should we be doing about energy in America?
This is Tom Hartman.
Every man lives. Have you
ever loved someone that you would die for? Have you ever walked too far out on a limb? Have you ever chased a dream too high to reach for and pulled it in?
Yep. Hold on, 21 minutes past the hour. Remember Monica Goodling? The woman who was working in the Justice Department who was responsible for hiring people based on their politics? A new report out from the Justice Department. They've actually done an internal evaluation of what happened, and they found that her hiring people based on their politics, in other words, only hire good Republicans, don't hire anybody who's even related to a Democrat, were, quote, particularly damaging to the department because it resulted in high-quality candidates for important details being rejected in favor of less qualified candidates. For example, they wanted to get one of the top terrorism prosecutors in the country. And Goodling refused to hire him. Why? Because his wife was a Democrat. The consequence of this, the damage that this produced, according to the report, it was that EOUSA, you know, the prosecutor's office, was forced to select a much more junior attorney who lacked any experience in counterterrorism issues and was grossly unqualified for the position. Amazing. I was going to say, if you can't impeach for crimes, can you impeach for incompetence? I mean, this is, Katrina is everywhere. It's everything with this administration. It is just absolutely breathtaking how they will put politics ahead of everything else. Rebecca in Woodlands, Washington. Hey, Rebecca, what's up?
Yes, good morning, Tom. And a perfect subject to go along with this. I was kind of over the weekend noting the kind of blackout over the story of the 400,000 gallons of fuel that was spilled into the Mississippi last Thursday.
Yeah, and that was about the time that John McCain was supposed to go have his photo op down
exactly.
there, wasn't it?
Exactly, and they said because of weather of Dolly.
Yeah.
But this sounds like it's the worst spill in this area since 2000.
Yeah.
Ships are stacking up, and there's been nothing about it, nothing.
Right. Yeah, and well, it would be an inconvenient story to cover right now from the point of view of corporate media that's, you know, has interlocking boards of directors with big corporate oil companies. And
well, I certainly understand that, but I just think that, you know, people don't know. I say, you know, I ask people about it, and they look at me like it didn't happen. If it's not on the TV, it didn't happen. And
yeah.
These poor people in New Orleans just can't get a break.
Yeah, and John McCain, by the way, the oil platform that McCain was going to go to was so far away from Dolly. I mean, Dolly was heading way over in the direction of Mexico, more or less, and, you know, ended up in South Texas. And McCain was going to be over in Louisiana way. I mean, it was like about a 500-mile difference. I believe that they called off his trip because of the oil spills, because it was becoming, you know, because they were concerned that the truth would come out.
Exactly.
Because
that's
once,
how I felt about it,
right,
too.
Once the reporters started seriously looking at that area and what was going on. Rebecca, thank you for the call. Once the reporters seriously started looking at that, they thought, you know, this, they realized that this was a lie, that there was no oil spill during Katrina, and a lie that Trent Lott repeated on national television, a lie that Newt Gingrich repeated on national television, a lie that was repeated over and over and over again on Fox News, that I heard repeated on the Hannity show. I mean, on and on again. And Nancy in Oak Lawn, Illinois. Hey, Nancy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hi. You know, I just have to ask you this. Every time I hear, what's her first name, Christy?
Carrie Lucas.
Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
On your program, I just wonder why. Why do you bother?
Well, because I think it's
no time you have on your show ever answers a question directly. Ever.
Well, I think that she gave it a good shot, Nancy. She gave it a good shot, and I have conservatives on the program on a regular basis because I think it's really important that we have that dialogue. It's really important that somebody be modeling how to talk back to the right. That's not. Oh, you idiot, and hanging up on them, or, you know, something like that. It's really important that we learn how to that all of us learn how to win the water cooler wars without there being blood on the floor, because we all have conservatives in our families, we all have conservatives in our places of work. We have to have these conversations. and I'm committed to doing it. Jeff in Orange County, California on K-Talk. Hey, Jeff, we've got a minute here before this break.
It's not incompetence with Monica Goodling. It's called dereliction of duty. When you go to work for the Justice Department, you take oaths. Specifically, those people who are involved with hiring or firing or purchasing take additional oaths, and this is dereliction of duty, and she should be brought up on charges, not just smacked of her hands because she was incompetent. This was willful. This wasn't somebody who didn't know better. And as you just depicted, we had somebody with absolutely zero experience in terrorism at the time of the war on terror. I think that borders on treason, in fact.
Yeah. Do you know what the penalties are for that, for dereliction of duty in the Justice Department?
It would depend on the crime itself, but involved in this type of a realm, I would think you would be looking, and no, I don't know specifically, but I do think that you'd be looking in some of the upper echelons, because there are different realms for what the infractions are.
Yeah. So it would go beyond firing. This is, you're talking a criminal offense here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting. Jeff, thank you very much for that. A little informational tidbit. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here on Air America Radio. Our website, back up again, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room or check out our video cam, our free video cam. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Call him now at 866-303-2270.
Past the hour. So I made a quick run during the break to the restroom here in the where we have we're broadcasting out of AM 620 KPOJ in Portland, Oregon, and there are five radio stations that run out of this group. It's a Clear Channel group, and one of them is the big 50,000 watt conservative station with Rush Limbaugh on it, and which plays in the bathroom. And as I'm walking in, I'm hearing Limbaugh's voice coming out of the ceiling going,
"And the Democrats have been successful in poisoning the minds of America's youth, these teachers' unions, for years."
And, oh, man. Anyway, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Brandon in Orange County, California. Hey, Brandon.
Hi, Tom. Good morning. You know, I just want to bring it back to this framing argument about the oil issue, because it's the same deal, you know. We've got to frame it the right way. And it comes down to this. I mean, drilling for oil in America to solve our energy crisis is like giving aspirin to a cancer patient. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
As far as the environmental impact goes, I'm a professional environmentalist here in Orange County, and so I'm stuck with framing this argument to conservatives every day. And what it comes down to is asking them, if somebody asks you to kill your dog for lower oil prices, or in your case, your cat for lower oil prices, would you do it? Because that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, and or kill your kids. I mean, because that's ultimately, when you figure that the number of cancers in the United States that are caused by our burning fossil fuels, because there are so many toxins in gasoline, is astounding. I mean, I've seen numbers as low as 10,000 a year, and you know, they go up from there.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're killing our kids. We're fouling the earth. It's just a, you know, Brandon, excellent point. Thank you. We do need to reframe this. Gregory in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Gregory.
Hey, I just wanted to ask people to think logically about the drill here, drill now thing.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. holds 1% of the world's oil, and we currently use 25%. So even if we were to drill ourselves dry, we wouldn't be able to maintain our current lifestyle.
Yeah.
And, you know, That information has been publicized time and time again, but I'm listening to your show. People aren't bringing that up. You don't hear it brought up in Congress.
Yeah, it's time for a national wake-up call, and I think Al Gore is trying to provide that. We need another I don't want to say we need another Jimmy Carter because some people, you know, don't. I think he was a great president, frankly. I think he was one of the best presidents of the 20th century. Jimmy Carter and LBJ, who I was out in the street. I mean, I got pepper gassed out the streets protesting LBJ's policies. You look back, I mean, you know, the war in Vietnam was a disaster, but the Great Society, LBJ did some really, you know, he cut poverty almost in half in just 4 years in the United States. It was, I suppose, the balance for the god-awful human suffering that he created with the war in Vietnam. But, well, he picked that one up off, well, I don't know, not... It really was Lyndon Johnson. I'll just have to leave it at that. Jerry in Orange County on K-Talk. Hey, Jerry.
Good morning, Tom. You have a great show. I learn something Thanks. Every time I listen to it. I'm calling about energy. Recently, I've checked into some solar, getting solar for the house,
mm-hmm.
as well as what it takes. I need to buy two new cars for my daughters mm-hmm. and wanted to check into some electric cars. We got to do something about the cost of solar. For me to get solar, I've got a 3,500 square foot house in Orange County. It was going to cost something like $100,000, and that still would not make me completely independent. We would have to probably get electricity off of the grid at night. We'd probably be awash. I mean, we wouldn't have any electric bill.
Yeah.
But.
The reason for this, Jerry, is that the solar industry in the United States and the sale of solar products in the United States is really very much in its infancy. And on the other hand, the other end of it, you know, we're consuming massive amounts of electricity rather wastefully. We've got all these parasitic power supplies plugged into things. You know, a lot of our appliances are not particularly energy efficient. So, you know, that's why I suggested that we reconsider what Jimmy Carter had done, which is to say, if you're going to do something, and I know it's being done, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing it in California right now. If you're going to move to solar power, or you're going to move to wind power, you're going to move to alternative sources of energy, we're going to help you. We're going to help make that happen, and that's going to create more demand, and that demand is going to drive up production, and it's going to drive down costs. Look at how rapidly computers, because we're talking technology here. Look over the last 30 years, about every year and a half, computing technology doubles in power and halves in cost. And when solar power is at the same level of demand as PCs, you're going to see that same curve being followed. And, you know, it's just it ain't rocket science. Mark in Laramie, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. It's actually Lamy, not Laramie.
Lamy, I'm sorry.
But you mentioned Carter. I was one of the lucky last few to get a tax rebate back at the end of the Carter administration for a photovoltaic solar pumping system.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since, I've pumped all my water. I'm off the grid. I pump all my water, and all my household current comes from a photovoltaic panel that's about the size of a sheet of plywood. And all these years, it's more than 25 years later, it's still working flawlessly.
Wow.
Now, if we had done what you said Carter asked us to do, which was to switch over, can you imagine? It would be like Germany is doing now. We could have, you know, all the houses could be creating their own energy.
Yep, absolutely. Mark, thank you very much for that. And, you know, absolutely right. And we had this opportunity. And then Reagan came in with the oil company money and said, no, not going to do that. Definitely not going to do that. Chuck in upstate New York. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi. I'm independent, and I was just curious, what should I vote for Obama for? What is it that about him that should excite me to vote for him?
What are your concerns, Chuck?
Well, let's put it this way. I don't care about gay marriage. I don't care that if you're gay and you get married, it doesn't matter to me. It's not going to affect my life. I don't really care about religion. Believe in what you want. It doesn't matter to me. What I do care about is I own a business.
Right.
I don't like paying taxes. I don't like paying other people's health care that don't work.
Right.
You know, that concerns me. I work hard for my money, and I have to, you know, some taxes are fine, but, you know, the whole tax thing, again, really gets on my nerves. So.
Is your business a 501c? Not a 501. Is your business a sub-S corporation or a C-corp?
I'm an S-corp.
So you're running your business through your personal checking account. In that case, if you're making, is your income under or over $250,000 a year?
Yeah, I make a lot of money.
You make more than $250,000 a year personally?
Yeah, I make a lot of money.
Well, if you're concerned about taxes, then Barack Obama's going to raise your taxes, Chuck. And so will McCain. The way that McCain's going to do it, though, is in all probability he's going to force your children to pay for it, or he's going to give you a recession that's going to destroy your business. Because that's what Bush is doing, and McCain wants to continue those policies.
Well, I mean, in this economy, my business is actually flourishing. I'm making more money now in a quote-unquote down economy than I ever was.
That's great. That's true of many businesses right now, Chuck. And you know, that's great. I think it's a marvelous thing that people can make money in the United States of America. I'm an entrepreneur too, and I'm making money, and I'm pleased with it. But the fact of the matter is, if you're saying you're only going to vote on taxes, then actually you will pay fewer taxes if you expect to live more than a couple of years. And if you have any concern at all for your kids, assuming that you have children, you will pay fewer taxes if Obama's elected than if McCain is, because McCain is going to spend even more money for the military, and he's going to borrow for that money. So instead of you paying $1,000 in taxes right now, you're going to have to pay $1,000 plus interest in taxes over the next 20 years, which is going to end up being $2,000 or $3,000.
But isn't that the same thing as saying if you give, you know, health care to everybody, I'm paying it either one way or the other way? Is it either going to go to the military or is it going to go to health care?
Well, actually, if you want to talk about health care right now, the health care industry, because we have privatized health care, we have private for-profit health care in the United States, unlike the rest of the industrialized world, about 20 to 25% of all health care dollars right now are either going into a CEO's pocket or into dividends for shareholders. And I would frankly rather have those dollars be going for health care. So if we got the health insurance companies out of the business, just get them out of the way, and just have it, you know, administered in a nice, dry, dull, boring fashion by dull, boring government bureaucrats who are making a reasonable salary and have a pension, you would reduce your cost by 25%, because we are paying for this anyway.
But can you actually tell me any government-run agency that actually runs efficiently?
Yeah, the post office does a great job. The post office has been getting the mail all over the place ever since George Washington was president.
The
police department does a pretty good job. The fire department does an excellent job. The military, by and large, you know,
they run off of the taxes, though. I mean, they run off of taxes. If they lose money, the post office, if they start to lose money, they raise the price of the stamp, right? So, I mean,
sure.
And the post office hasn't reacted to the decline in postage when the Internet came along. So, I mean, I wouldn't
say the post office is doing just fine, and I think it's run very efficiently. My point is that in the area of the commons, Chuck, do you really want to have your – I mean, do you really like the fact that if you disagree with the way that your health insurance company is – with what they're saying they will pay for – so your health insurance company says to you,
honestly,
Chuck, you know,
honestly,
we're not going to cut.
Honestly, I've been to the emergency room twice in the last 2 weeks because of allergies. And I'll be honest with you, I was extremely pleased with my insurance company.
And if you weren't, let's just say hypothetically, let's say your insurance company next week decides, hey, he's had two allergy attacks. We're not going to cover him for allergies anymore. And you start calling the president of your health insurance company. He can have you put in jail for stalking. If the bill was being paid by your congressman, by Congress, you could stand out in front of your congressman's office all day long.
I don't think that'll ever come to that. But.
Well,
all right. Thanks for your.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Chuck. 45 minutes past the hour.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Downright crazy things on the radio. Some Democratic campaign buttons made for distribution in Idaho. I have two candidates, Barack Obama, and it was supposed to be Larry DeRocco. Or maybe it's DeRocco, the Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate, but they got the wrong Larry. So it's Barack Obama and Larry Craig. The wrong Larry. Amazing. Oh, those will be some collectors. Carl Wolfson will be on that one. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. TalkRadioNews.com, the website. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
I think the biggest news today is not only General Petraeus saying, well, we can't do this drawdown, we can't do a date certain because there are so many problems with it, and in fact there has been more violence since 2004 in the last few months than any time really since 2004. Well, then, of course, we hear today that there are suicide bombers killing dozens of people in Iraq.
Right.
So we have heard all weekend the McCain people going after Obama for saying that the surge was not a good idea. Tell me how the surge has worked.
Well, that's very interesting. This morning, Carl and I interviewed a reporter on the ground in Baghdad, and he was talking about how Kirkuk, the northern oil city on the border of the Kurdistan region, is on the edge of just a total military meltdown. And this is one of the two cities where these suicide bombings happened today. One was in Baghdad, one was in Kirkuk, because the Kurds and the Turks, the Turkmen, the hereditary Turks, are battling over who's going to control the oil and who's going to control the city. And it seems like it's going to erupt into open warfare. And you've still got Sunnis and Shia fighting with each other. I mean, it's, yeah, so the surge, I think Obama's point that the surge, of course, it's like you have more cops on the street, but if you don't address the core issues of what causes crime, you're not going to stop the crime. And it's the same thing here. If we don't deal with the core issues, we need to be doing, I don't know if you've read the book, Three Cups of Tea.
Yes.
This guy building schools in Pakistan, and all of a sudden the people in the areas where he's building schools, they're kicking the Taliban out. The people are kicking the Taliban out.
Well,
and just down the road, we're dropping bombs on people, and they're so angry at us, they're inviting the Taliban in.
Right. Well, I actually just had lunch with somebody who I'm about to put you on a conference call with at some point. And what he has done in the areas in Africa, Uganda, et cetera, is to develop sustainability, schools, et cetera, because what he said is once you develop a middle class, then the governments become much more stable. They
right.
become very unstable when you have a lot, as you well know, a lot of poor people, and then there's just this jockeying for power on the very top.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Other things going on. It's interesting today. The White House puts out something called a morning update, and it sort of has what they view as the news that's in favor of their position.
Mm-hmm.
And today, it's almost as if he is countering. I've never seen them do a photograph, but today they did a photograph, and they have a picture of the president holding up a baby while he was greeting military personnel when he left the Peoria airport the other day. And, it's so amazing that they've got him doing this essentially with troops, when the whole big fight has been about troops this week.
Right, and when the McCain campaign has just rolled out a new ad in which they attack Obama and they say he didn't visit wounded troops because they wouldn't allow cameras in, which is a patent untruth. It's
totally untrue, and look at the voting records, as I'm sure you have, between the Obama camp with the GIs and the McCain people.
Right. McCain opposed the new GI Bill. McCain has voted against the troops over and over and over again in every regard except for sending them into combat.
Right. A couple other interesting things. Today they are starting the work to overturn. Tom Coburn has single-handedly sat on many bills. They need 60 bills necessary. It's about $10 billion worth of 60 votes. $10 billion worth of bills to overturn this. Harry Reid made some deals with Republicans, so they got some of what they want, and it looks like Tom Coburn, Dr. No, is going to be out in the cold on this. Also, Senator Obama is going to be meeting with his economic team this week, and it is going to include Warren Buffett, Eric Schmidt, who's Google chairman, Paul Volcker, and Lawrence Summers, former of Harvard University, and, of course, the Treasury, and Bob Rubin. So he's going to be meeting with them this week.
Who's meeting? Barack Obama's meeting with them?
Barack Obama is meeting
yeah.
with them this
That's
week.
That's an interesting collection. I mean, because there's going to be some significant disagreements, I would guess, between, for example, Bob Rubin and George Soros.
To say the least.
yeah, yeah. That's
to say the least. Also, the White House today is saying that they are expecting almost a $500 billion deficit this year. And although the economy supposedly is growing, as you know, it's taking its toll in lots of ways. And when you take out government jobs, it's not a pretty picture.
Yeah. Yeah. While in fact, I would submit to you that the only reason that we've had positive employment for the last 5 years is government jobs. You know, from contractors to companies associated with the war in Iraq. If you were to take out all that money that has gone into the war in Iraq and all of the jobs that it has created, then we would still be in a Bush recession. I mean, not that we're not now, but I mean, it would be far worse than it's been, to the tune of millions of jobs, in my humble opinion. So
your humble opinion is absolutely correct. And they also, there's a lot of talk now about the tax rebates and not having a big effect. And so the Democrats want a second stimulus package, which the White House is fighting.
That's interesting, because you would think the Republicans would want that second stimulus because that stimulus will help them, you know, going up to the elections. And then they'd want to stop stimulating after Obama becomes president.
I think a lot of Republicans actually are in favor of it. The White House has given them all the grief.
Right. Interesting. Ellen Ratner, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Is Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. On the line with us right now, T-Bone Pickens, the oil man, entrepreneur, and now wind power proponent. His website, boonpickens.com. Mr. Pickens, welcome to the program.
Good. Thanks, Tom.
Glad to have you with us. You have this plan that you've been promoting in the relatively ubiquitous now television ads and some radio ads around to build this, well, you're in the process of building this massive wind farm in Texas and basically running the whole country in that direction and converting our auto fleet over to natural gas. Do I have that right?
You got it.
Okay. First of all, in order to build out wind power across the center of the country, what do you need from we the people? What do you need from the government in terms of commons infrastructure, transmission lines, stuff like that?
Well, it's a fabulous resource that the country has, and you can build really all the wind you want in there. I'm proposing 200,000 megawatts, but you could go to 400,000. But what you or 600 or 800, whatever you want. But what you need is a modern grid, and you need to get the transmission. You need to transmit the wind energy out of that wind corridor to the east and west coast. So Congress, the people are going to have to put the pressure on Congress to declare an emergency and give those corridors out quickly. The reason has to be done very fast is because you're spending $700 billion a year on foreign oil, and that's 70% of all the oil that we use every day.
Yeah, but only 16% of that foreign oil is coming from the Middle East. Most of it's coming from Mexico and Canada. It's not.
Well, wait a minute. Hold it on that one. It's 1,800,000 barrels is coming from Canada, yes, but it's 38% of the oil that we're importing comes from the Mideast and Africa, which are the unstable areas. Mm-hmm. But don't count on Mexico much further, because their largest field, Cantarell, is declining.
It's
about 25% a year.
Yeah, I know. So I know it's flattening out. Okay. So I don't disagree with you that we need to get off foreign oil, and frankly that we need to get off oil. We need to get off carbon-based fuels. Why? I was in Denmark a couple months ago. We did our show from there for a week, and we had a couple of members of parliament on, and we had a guy from Vespa, their big wind power company. You know, they're making turbines now in Colorado, and they in that country are 19% of their electricity is now generated by wind, and their goal is 30% within the next 5 years. And what they're doing is they're building out an infrastructure within the country for electric cars, plug-in hybrid electric cars, to get 150 miles to the gallon, basically, because they mostly run on electricity. And during the night, when the wind power is a surplus, everybody's car plugged into the grid becomes a giant storage battery, you know, a five million person storage battery. And during the day, when people drive their car to work and then they plug back in at work, those cars then sell that electricity back into the grid. And you can actually, if you're buying off the grid at night, you're buying off the grid at, say, 2 cents a kilowatt hour. If you're selling back to the grid during the day, you're selling back at 4 cents a kilowatt hour. You're actually making a profit with your car, and the cars become part of the grid, and it deals with that problem of storage of electricity overnight. Why not do something like that rather than try to convert all of our cars to natural gas?
You know, I'm not converting any of your cars to natural gas. I'm only talking about the government on all new purchases of cars, natural gas, and the fleets would be natural gas. Not starting my car. I'm for the electrical grid and the battery and all, but I don't think you can get to the numbers that we have to get to reduce $700 billion with an electric car. I don't think you can put enough of them online. And so my point is it takes the natural gas, use it for transportation fuel for a 20-year bridge, and by that time you will have the grid set up and all, you can go with the electrical car.
Well, if we're declaring a national emergency, I mean, look at how quickly we went from General Motors and Chrysler and Ford and Dodge and all the companies at the time in the 1940s went from making cars to making tanks. I mean, it took about 2 months.
That's all. And see that, for instance, General Motors makes no natural gas vehicles in the United States, but makes 19 of them out of the country in
right.
South America and Europe.
Yeah,
there isn't any trick to this, but you've got 8 million natural gas vehicles in the world, and we only have 142,000 of them in the United States.
Well, and my point was they could just as easily be making electric vehicles. I mean, if we were to say, okay, it's an emergency and even mandate that the car companies have to do it, give them some sort of a floor so that they're not taking huge risk and say, you know, we are going to have hybrid electric vehicles. They could be hybrid natural gas and electric vehicles, but they're going
all
to be...
That's a good idea, but let's can't run the trucks.
Yeah.
So the fleets have to be on natural gas.
Yeah, all the cars.
Yeah, I agree
with you on that.
You got to work them together is what happens.
And, yeah, you're right about the fleets.
We've got to get off of the foreign oil.
Yeah, absolutely. Coal. We're burning an awful lot of coal in the United States. Why not use a lot of that if we were to put more emphasis on electric in the direction of passenger vehicles, passenger cars, and try to move the natural gas into replacing coal-fired power plants with natural gas-fired power plants? Why not do that as a transition?
Well, you can do it. I mean, it's going to take a great amount of time, but you're now power generation 50% on coal.
Right.
So
if you switch
all the coal over to natural gas is doing 22% of the power generation. It's the most expensive of all that you've got is the natural gas.
But it's the cleanest.
Oh, no question. It's cleaner. But let me tell you, when you start raising that price, you get a lot of complaints for the consumer.
But see, the problem is that it may not be actually the most expensive because the cost of coal isn't just the cost of the coal. It's the cost of all the people who get asthma and lung cancers.
Yeah, it's hard to tell the guy that's getting the bill every month that, hey, look, that you're better off with natural gas than you are coal.
I mean, it's the coal that's driving all that mercury into the atmosphere.
I know, but the people, when it gets down to dollars, I can promise you that I can remember when I was trying to sell natural gas as a transportation fuel. I said, it's cleaner, it's cheaper, it's domestic.
Right.
And I said, you've got to take all that in consideration. They didn't take anything in consideration except how cheap was it.
Right.
That was it.
Well, that tends to be people's bottom lines, just like with taxes and everything else. What are you looking for from Congress? You said we need to declare an emergency. What kind of money is going to be attached to this? And also, why not do like the Germans are doing, where they're helping people? You got about 30% of the houses now in Germany have solar panels on their roofs, and people are producing 20, 30, 40, in some cases even 100% of the electricity for their own homes with this program. Why not have more electric as well?
what they're doing on that, though, is they're subsidizing it. And but right. That's fine with me. I'm ready to go solar. Listen, I'm for everything American. And it's and I'm kind of, you know, I'm green, but I'm more interested in reducing the dependency on foreign oil. And so anything, any, you know, like ethanol, it's not a good fuel. There's no question it isn't. But it beats foreign oil.
Yeah.
So pick anything before I use foreign oil.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. It's one that resonates, I think, right across the political spectrums. We're talking to T. Boone Pickens. We've got a minute or so left here, and I know you've got to run. What are you asking of Congress in terms of specifics?
Okay, you know? They need to extend the production tax credit, which is already in existence, but they extend it year after year.
For natural gas.
One year at a time. Yeah. No, production tax credit on the wind.
I see.
And,
wind. Okay.
And just go ahead and that's wind and solar.
Mm-hmm.
And do that. They don't need to do anything for natural gas.
Yeah.
Natural gas has what they need. You can do all of this unbelievably cheap for the government.
Yeah. So simply extending the production tax credit, which would give people who are investing in this an incentive to continue doing so.
Yeah, right. You got to do that if you want to hurry up the process. But second, you're going to have to give those transmission corridors to move that power out of the central part of the United States to the coast.
Right. And what about the decentralization of this? I mean, what about individual homeowners?
Homeowners on what?
Being able to generate their own wind or electric power.
Oh, I love it. I think that's good stuff.
Okay, so so you would embrace the German model for doing that?
I would, and you haven't said anything about it, but I'm also for drilling in the outer continental shelf.
Yeah, I know you are.
Well, I am an Anwar. Listen, I want anything that's going to reduce that foreign oil.
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, we can agree to disagree on that one, but, you know, I get your point. And if you can make some money doing it, and it's the best thing for the country, I'm all in favor of it. T. Boone Pickens.
Okay, good deal. Very good.
BoonePickens.com. Thank you so much for being with us, sir. Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. Interesting. How do we solve our energy problems in this country? I'll tell you about the German system when we come back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
I think it's a start. I mean, if cranky old billionaires who have done insane things in their lives, like funding the Swift Boats veterans, decide that they can make some money on clean energy, frankly, it seems to me like that's a good thing for the United States. At a certain point, we have to say, okay, we're going to take off our partisan hat and put on our American hat for a moment. And I was particularly pleased to hear him say that he would endorse the German program, although I don't know if that was just a throwaway line. Frankly, this is the direction, the German program, I think, is the direction, and a variation of the Danish program is the direction that we really, in my humble opinion, need to be going. Germany has less sunlight than we do here in the Pacific Northwest. They have less sunlight than cloudy Michigan. Right, I lived in Germany for a year. I remember during the fall or the spring? I forget which season it was, but we went 93 days, as I recall, without once seeing the sun. Now, on the radio, on the local radio station, they were counting down the days. How long since the sun has even cracked through once? And yet, even at that, There's enough sunlight making it through those clouds to create solar power. And Germany was looking at a situation where they had a couple of nuclear power plants, and I actually flew into Germany on my birthday, on May 7th, 1986, as Chernobyl was melting down. And as I recall, I'd have to go back and check the exact dates, but it was within a couple of days. And in fact, I remember walking around in Frankfurt after I got off the plane, and the street was empty. The streets of Frankfurt was deserted because it was raining, and the clouds had Chernobyl dust in them, and nobody wanted to get it on them. I mean, and radioactivity rained down on the country. The year that we lived there, we carried a Geiger counter with us. You go into the supermarket, and there were certain areas you could walk by. I remember in particular the apricots and the almonds. You walk by those things, and the Geiger counter was just there, going brrrr, like that. And people would walk around out in the woods, you know, and occasionally you'd find hot spots. So anyhow, the Germans are very sensitive about nuclear power, and they're saying, you know, we've got a couple of nukes, but we really don't want any more. So what do we do? So they put together a program where the government says to the banks, you will loan money to people. You'll give people a mortgage based on the value of their house to put solar on their house. The loan term can be up to 10 years. Actually, it can be up to 20 years, but the typical loan is 10 years. And the terms, it has to be at 1% below prime. So in Germany, that's like around a 3.5%, I think it's around a 3.5%, or maybe it's a 2.5% loan rate. So it's a very low interest loan. And then at the same time, they say to the power companies, okay, that $1 billion that you were going to use to build a new nuclear power plant, instead, you're going to use that money to buy electricity back from homeowners at 65 cents a kilowatt hour, at a substantial markup over what you're selling electricity to them for. So the homeowners during the period, during that 10 or 20 year period of time that they've got the mortgage, they're selling electricity back to the local power grid or back into the national power grid at a rate that generates enough money for them that they can pay off the mortgage on the PV systems, the photovoltaic system on their roof. And it costs them essentially zero. When the mortgage is paid off, they now own the system. And at that point, the utility only buys electricity from them at the prevailing rate, at the rate that they sell it as well. And by doing this, now you take a train across Germany and you look up at the south slopes. So you take a train east-west across the country and you look up at the south slopes and you see all of these solar panels. I mean, it's like maybe a third of the house, it seems like. I don't know the exact number now, but 20, 30, some huge percentage of the country. And this is just like in the last decade has gone solar. And the country as a whole has not had to build two new nuclear power plants. And the really great thing about this is that it distributes the power at a local level. I get very nervous hearing people say, yeah, we need lots of transmission lines and centralized power. By the way, I'm going to own it. You know, I think as a starting point, it's great that somebody like T. Boone Pickens is talking about this because it'll get the attention of the Republicans. It makes it irrefutable to the Republicans. But we need to take it a step farther. And we need to say this needs to be working in a way that communities can generate their own electricity, that they don't have to depend on billionaires trying to become multi-billionaires. And the idea of hybrid gas electric cars, mostly electric cars, or entirely electric cars. You know, let's go to Chevy, to General Motors, and say, you want to make the Volt? Here, you know, we're going to do a project like in World War II where we made tanks. We're going to make sure that you can do it, and you can do it at a small but predictable profit, so there's no risk for you. Go ahead and make the Volt. Let's start selling these things. Let's do it tomorrow. We did that in World War II with tanks. We could do it right now with electric cars. This is, as Pickens said, a national emergency. Let's call it that. Let's act like it is. And do it beyond just, oh, hey, let's have some huge windmills. I mean, that's a start, but it's just a start. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Walk.
4 minutes past the hour. Hey, coming up this weekend, I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin with our affiliate station, The Mike 92.1. I'll be speaking Saturday at the Nonstop Radio Symposium in the Exhibition Hall at the Alliant Energy Center, 1919 Alliant Energy Center Way. You can get more information at nonstopradio.com. So, strange things going on out there in the world. Actually, New York City. This is the two New York stories that hopefully have nothing to do with each other. The first is a naked city. Some folks are stripping down to escape the scorching summer temperatures, but others aren't waiting until they hit the area's clothing-optional beaches. The au natural look is catching on at city restaurants, a Midtown yoga club, and even a stand-up comedy joint. This is an article by Adam Nichols in the New York Post. We're just more comfortable nude, said John Ordover, who rents city eateries for dinner parties with a strict dress code, no clothes allowed. And it goes on about, you know, how wonderful this is. Okay, so that's story number one. Here's story number two. This is just down the road in the South Street Seaport. A mystery odor wafting through the Seaport's residential neighborhood over the past few weeks has restaurants reeling, homeowners gagging, and tourists left holding their noses. It's disgusting, like a rotten fish left out on the sidewalk for a year, said Venzanzio Pasublo, 33, owner of Il Brigante, a restaurant on Front Street. With the Fulton Fish Market long gone, theories abound on the origin of the odor. Some think it's illegal dumping. Others point the fingers at the Waterfall Art Project. One person insists it's the preserved corpses on display at Bodies, the exhibition nearby. Locals describe the smell as dead rats, stinky cheese, raw sewage. No fun. So the South Street Stinkport, as the New York Post refers to it. 36 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Howard in San Luis Obispo. Hey, Howard, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've been listening to you and Mr. Pickens' discussion about clean energy.
Yeah.
And I'm very much interested in his proposal. And I'm even more interested in Al Gore's 10-year clean energy program.
I agree.
What I'd like to see is both of these fellows join together and use their money, influence, and political stature. And considering they're a Republican and Democrat, that won't hurt. And also maybe eliminate duplication, because we're talking about billions of dollars of superstructure. What do you think?
Pickens has already said that if Al Gore were the energy secretary in an Obama administration, he would be very, very happy to work with him.
I love to hear that.
Yeah, he's on the record with that. Howard, thanks for the call, and good point. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff.
I got to mention something about energy before I talk about my main thing, which was the government spending. Right now, the program you're talking about in Germany is driving the U.S. industry. The money is being spent here in the U.S. Nanosolar. Germany bought up the entire first production.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
so
we're actually...
So it's all our nanosolar. We're producing solar panels that are being sold in Germany.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
And actually, Nanosolar, an American company, is now building a plant in Luckenwald, Germany.
Uh-huh.
So it's a German. Yeah, we're losing our this part of the market here because they're building it over there. I mean, it's great that it's being done.
Right.
You know, U.S.
Right.
companies are getting money, but it'd be nice if we had the panels here. A lot of us can't buy some of these panels because they're being sold over in Germany.
Well, it's just like Vespa, you know, the Danish company, largest manufacturer of windmills in the world, has building a factory in Colorado right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because they see a market in the U.S. for windmills.
But
probably Mr. Pickens.
Mm-hmm. You had this earlier caller calling about the, you know, he doesn't want to spend the money on somebody else's health insurance. You know.
Yeah, the guy who says he's making more than $250,000 a year, but he's running it all through a sub-S corp, which leaves me scratching my head. At that point, you know, he really should have a C corp, and I think that the guy was blowing smoke at us. But nonetheless.
Well, first of all, about government spending.
Yeah.
I mean, Republicans have spent much more than Dems. Low taxes are an illusion, because if you spend the money, you still owe it.
That's right.
So somebody's going to have to pay, and if we don't pay now, we're probably going to pay much more later.
Yeah, well, and Bush is leaving us. Bush just issued his budget with a $482 billion deficit. And that, by the way, Congress had required that this budget this year, the 2009 budget, had to have in it the cost of the war, and Bush left them out. So it's really going to be like a $650 billion deficit that Bush is leaving.
And that deficit probably doesn't include what's being borrowed from Social Security. We have many times the Bush.
That's another $200-300 billion.
Yes. But anyway, every time someone complains they don't want to contribute to pay for the health insurance for the general welfare of all of us, I come back and say, okay, here's all the government spending, present spending I don't support. I don't like paying for baseball stadiums and football stadiums I never use. I don't like paying for highways before paying for mass transit. Don't like the subsidies we're paying for logging companies and mining and oil wells and dams, or for nuclear weapons or prison system I don't believe in. I could go and illegal wars and border fences that could drive animals toward extinction. Most of the government spending I don't support. But, yeah, the thing is we have to contribute as the Commonwealth.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have to get active and involved in the political process so that we can make sure that the things that we do support are the things that are being funded and the things that we don't support aren't getting funded.
Exactly. So. I hear people complain to each other all the time, and a simple question I ask, when was the last time you told your representative or your city council person or congressperson?
Yeah.
And most can't answer that. They never.
That's right. People think voting is enough, and voting isn't enough in a democracy. I'd even take it a step beyond that, Jeff, and ask, when was the last time you showed up at a local meeting of the Republican, Democratic, Green, whatever, name the party, a local political function?
And you could show up, actually, your congressperson's office. Last time I did that, they ended up giving us much more time than we asked for, and
That's
we
great.
Got to really discuss things.
That's great. That's great. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call and for your ongoing activism there in Denver. Jeff, I believe that's the same Jeff that I profiled in my book, Screwed, who's just doing some great political work out there. Dan in San Diego. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Oh, yeah. I called to talk about Monica Goodling, but I just wanted to add something to what that last caller said. And for the life of me, every time you hear the Democrats are going to raise your taxes, I don't know why the Democrats don't fire back that Bush has already raised our taxes, you know,
right.
with all that spending.
Yeah, dramatically.
Yeah. So, but Monica Goodling, where, you know, the story how she rejected an inexperienced career terrorism prosecutor because his wife was a Democrat, and it's the height of hypocrisy.
He wasn't inexperienced, he was experienced.
Yeah,
that she rejected.
And it's the height of hypocrisy. I mean, the administration, how many times were they out there, claiming to be tough on terror, and then they preach meritocracy, and this is hypocrisy. I mean, this just flies in the face of those claims that they're making.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the thing, Dan, is that these guys, A, they're inconsistent. B, you know, they talk a good line, but it's not unlike the same thing that we're seeing. I should grab this Harry Truman clip. He used to love to go off on Republicans for this. We're seeing this right now here in Oregon with Gordon Smith, the Republican senator. They're seeing the same thing in Minnesota with Norm Coleman, the Republican senator. You know, they vote right down the line, 90-95% with Bush year after year after year, and then election year comes along and all of a sudden they're moderates.
Yeah.
All of a sudden they're independents. All of a sudden they're talking a whole different line. Dan, thanks for the call. I got to move along here, but it's enough already. Pamela in Durban, Michigan. Hey, Pamela.
Hi. I'm
What's
talking
up?
About T. Boone Pickens.
Yes.
And you've undoubtedly seen his commercial. Well, toward the end of the commercial is a solar tracker, which a lot of Americans are not familiar with. That particular solar tracker is manufactured by my son-in-law's company in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It seems very odd that these are being sold all over the world, not only by his company, but others, you know, Spain, Japan, China, Canada. And yet here in the United States, nobody seems to be aware of this.
What is a solar tracker?
A solar tracker is, if you've seen the thing, a tracker, unlike a solar panel, which is stable, a tracker, and Ron's company, they're called azimuth trackers. They follow the sun.
Oh, I see.
And
so it's a solar panel that, like a flower, moves as the sun moves.
Yes, and they can increase energy production from 33% to 44%, depending on where you live.
Makes sense, yeah. The farther north you are, the more.
But nobody knows about this here in the U.S. They've got them. All these other nations in the world are very aware.
Yeah, well, that's because all these other nations have been encouraging and building out their alternative energy infrastructure, and we're not. Pamela,
that's
real
right.
quickly, can you give me a website for your son's?
Yes, watsun.com, WATTSUN.com.
Great. Thanks a lot, Pamela.
And there's a YouTube thing on there that shows how these function, so that might help. But he also,
right.
you can see all these places, you know, if you go through several of the pages, you can see all the places that...
Pamela, I got to move along, but thank you very much, and I'm glad you got that out there. Let's see here. In Mill Valley, California, I'm sorry, I've lost your name off the screen.
Hi, this is John.
Hey, John. We've got a minute here before the break. What's up?
Okay, a couple of quick points about T. Boone Pickens, and I noticed that he was referring to centralizing or making reference to centralizing the grid lines in Texas and in the South.
Well, he goes from Texas all the way up to the Canadian border. There's, if you look at a map of wind power in the United States, there's this area that runs right down the east side of the Rockies where there's just an enormous amount of wind power as a result of wind coming down off the mountains.
Oh, I see. So it's a great resource for wind.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to just say, just to refer back to the smartest men in the room, you know, in the Enron thing where they took over the grid, it's important not to let the fox in the hen house too much.
Yeah, and that's where I was saying, you know, I'm all in favor of cranky billionaires making money on wind power and making more money on wind power. You know, I don't have a problem with it, but I want to make sure that at the end of the day, our energy fate is in the hands of the democracy, not the billionaires.
Absolutely. But
thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. I mean, and that means, in my opinion, that means having at least as much focus on local power system, local power generation, solar panels in individual homes and communities as it does on these giant wind farms. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
And by the way, not only will I be in Madison this weekend, but on August 16th, I'll be in Seattle with AM 1090, Talk 1090, KPTK. We'll be at the 6:30, 7:30 p.m. at the Seattle Center Exhibition Hall. That's Saturday night, a week from Saturday. And, of course, I'll be at the Radio Row, both the Democratic and Republican conventions, with our affiliates AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Voice in Denver, and in Minneapolis on AM 950, KTNF, the Voice of Minnesota. So, Tom Ridge, you may recall, said the Bush administration periodically put the USA on high alert for terrorist attacks, even though, well, this is the story, I'm sorry, this is from USA Today. The Bush administration periodically put the USA on high alert for terrorist attacks, even though then Homeland Security's chief Tom Ridge argued there was only flimsy evidence to justify raising the threat level. Ridge said he often disagreed with administration officials who wanted to elevate the threat level to orange or high risk of terrorist attack, but it was overruled. And then this is a quote from Ridge. He says, more often than not, we were the least inclined to raise it. Sometimes we disagreed with the intelligence assessments. Sometimes we even thought if the intelligence was good, you don't necessarily put the country on alert. There were times when some people were really aggressive about raising it, and we said, for what? And, of course, if you go back and look at when they raised the terror threats, it always was the day after John Kerry got some good news. And this, as we were coming up into the campaign. So it's, you know, it's pretty obvious that the Department of Homeland Security was being used as another political arm of the Bush administration for the reelection of George Bush. And even at that, they had to steal a vote in Ohio. So now comes the news. Pierre Thomas reporting for ABC News. Today, government officials have been quietly stepping up counter-terror efforts. This is what the Department of Homeland Security is quietly declaring a period of heightened alert, or POHA, a P-O-H-A. It's going to run roughly from this August through July of next year. Will they be scaring us again?
Be afraid, September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists, danger, doomed killers. Be afraid. The world will drift toward tragedy.
Yeah, okay, George. Back in the box, George. 866-303-2270, our number, Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. It's great to talk to you.
Thanks.
This whole thing about government being able to be used for good that T. Boone Pickens is talking about is really long overdue. I don't exactly trust his motives, but I really like that he's willing to go there. And I think if more conservatives come over to that side, they'll understand that liberalism actually can improve society.
Yeah,
and they,
exactly.
If you had a caller, We had a caller last hour that claimed to be independent, but he didn't seem to understand what independence really means. I mean, you know, we want to be independent and free and all this stuff, but we also have needs. You know, we got to deliver the mail, so the post office does a great job. And you know, he trashed the post office a little bit without, you know, really thinking about it. But I want to remind people, it's a quasi-government agency. It has to pay its bills, and every once in a while it doesn't. Like now, when the business activity is contracting, what do? We, the people and Congress, get together and try to find ways to improve it. You can't do that with Exxon. You can't do that with a health insurance company. You can't do that with Blackwater. And that's why these guys shouldn't be in charge.
Yep, absolutely. Brilliantly said, Jeff. Thank you very much. Perfect. Perfect statement. David in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, David.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. I have a question. I guess, you know, according to the shock doctrine, you know, the free market should be able to play themselves out without any government regulation or anything, you know, price controls. With the current gas prices and oil prices, with the Republicans calling for action as far as drilling, is that something that's just an election year fraud, or they just know that it's not going to matter? You know, they just let the markets play itself out.
You know, I'm guessing this is one of the reasons that T. Boone Pickens is all in favor of it, is that, you know, they've got 10,000 leases on more than 60 million acres of public land. I mean, leases where they've already said, okay, we found some oil here. We would like a license to drill. Over 10,000 of those leases have already been issued. They're paying for it. I mean, they're just paying pennies a year, you know, on these things, but they're paying to hold on to this stuff because it's money in the bank. And they want more. They want a whole lot more.
Yeah, and is this part of the shock doctrine, too, as far as, like, getting Americans used to paying $4 a gallon gas? I heard on CNN, you know, there's relief at the pumps because gas prices went down 12 cents a gallon in the last two weeks.
Right, yeah. I expect that we're going to see gas prices dropping a fair amount more between now and Election Day. This is the Republicans' last chance to, you know, pull the fat out of the fire, as it were. Thanks a lot for the call. Ray in Chicago. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Tom. One of the big Republican myths has been that we haven't built a new oil refinery in 30 years. You know, we hear that over and over from McCain on down. Oh, we haven't built a new refinery since the 70s.
Oh, we've built massive amounts of refinery capacity.
Exactly. For example, we have an Amoco oil refinery here in Indiana. It's now owned by British Petroleum. They're spending billions of dollars on expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually prefer to expand, you know, the existing site.
It's cheaper and easier. They've already got the infrastructure. They've already got the transportation systems into and out of it. It's already in an area. They've already done all the zoning stuff. They've dealt with all those issues. They've already got the oil coming into it.
Okay.
There are a lot of limits on where you can build a refinery anyway, because it's got to be someplace where you can easily get oil into it. Refineries consume enormous amounts of oil by definition.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so you can't just, like, build a refinery in Butte, Montana and say, hey, let's put a refinery here.
Right.
You know, it's you know, where are you going to get the oil? What, are you going to run 5,000, you know, 18-wheelers every hour into the, you know, it ain't going to happen.
Right.
So, yeah, good point, Ray. Thanks a lot for the call, and you know, well said. Coming up tomorrow, Mark Morano, speaking of oil, Mark Morano, the communications director for James Inhofe's staff in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, is going to, we're going to have a conversation about global warming. What a surprise. And, of course, the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartmann Program. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Let your members of Congress know and the Senate know what you're thinking today. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmannRadio.com.